seems the obvious term to define today's class would be impermanence. Which seems like such an innocuous word, where it's not laden with all of the attachment, emotion, love, connection, beauty, investment, hunger, passion that one has for life and for each other, for certain each others. We as human beings live as though there can be some kind of permanence, although in the back of our mind we know it's not there, really back of the mind. We don't live in a world of impermanence. Most of us live in a world in which we are building the permanent, and we do it out of a kind of ignorance. But it's not a delusional ignorance, really. It's kind of programmed into the system. We are meant to believe that this is eternal, that it will never change. And we always seem surprised by change. We always seem blindsided by it. Rudy always said, life turns on a dime, and I went, yeah, and then he died. One day. He was my teacher, who I had projected into an 80, 90-year-old guy, and I still sitting at his feet, and he was gone in his mid-40s. And I always look to that as the beginning of my spiritual practice. Rudy said, this life is your spiritual life. It's not the life in a monastery. It's not the life in a cave in the Himalayas. It's not something you arrive at when you're 90 or 80 or 70 or somewhere down the road when you're done with everything else. This is it. It's either alive and well, or it's trying to be alive and well, or it has yet to be born. Those of you who come here and have been coming here, in some cases for decades, those of you who just sit at home, those of you who tinker with the idea of one day getting serious, the only thing I can tell you is that Rudy said to me, on the opening day of my experience with him, on the introductory class sitting on the subway grate outside of his store on 7th Avenue, he said, if you're going to do this, you should do it every day for the rest of your life. Now, I know I've told this story 1,000 times. I do not know what it was in me, a fairly undisciplined kid from Detroit, who heard these words from somebody sitting on a subway grating outside of a store in New York City. But I really took it to heart. And I sat every day for 44 years. And again, you've heard this story. Somewhere in the 44th year, I can almost tell you the date. It was around Blanche's birthday, around the 26th of September. That's when this thing started to happen. I stopped meditating. I stopped. I said, I'm not getting there. I'm not arriving. I haven't arrived. 44 years of sitting and nothing. Nothing has happened. Of course, I had a pretty amazing life. Beautiful children, wonderful marriage, which, by the way, we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary 2 days ago. Yeah, that's circular. It was an amazing, has been an amazing life. And I can talk about that as well, but the idea that I hadn't gotten there was very significant. And there meant a kind of attainment, which for me was this idea of enlightenment or specialness or something transcendent of all this. And I despaired that I had chosen the wrong path, and I simply gave it up. I stopped sitting. 2 weeks later, at a gathering of people who had achieved awakening, non-dualists that they call themselves, in North Carolina, I was sitting there listening to a guy who I could not comprehend, Paul, I could not understand a word he was saying, but I knew he was saying the truth. And as I listened to him, it is impossible to describe quite what happened, but when he was done talking, I looked around and I said, oh, something's different. And then I realized there was no Bruce there. There was just something. And this something wanted to thank him. And it got up and went to him. He said, I said, I want to thank you. He said, ah, great guy, it's great, I'm glad. It was like a not issue. But other people there got really emotional and started crying and like almost applauding like I had done something. But I went through this extraordinary period of realizing that the last thing holding me to my spiritual life was the wanting to get there. And when I gave up wanting to get there, I guess I realized I was already here, that there is no there, ever. This is it, period. In the most profound way to say that, there is nothing else but this. This line I heard in a movie when I was a curator at the Whitney Museum many, many years ago, showed movies. And a line in a movie that impregnated me was, this is it. There is nothing else but this. And this is it. And I remember telling Blanche about it. She said, that's true. And I kept going, yeah. I didn't know what to do with it. Awakening is basically an awareness of exactly that. This is it. You may want to project a life leading up to this, and you want to maybe project a life leading away from this, but the only life you will ever have or ever know will be right here, in this it. This is it. Why you guys are finding yourself listening to this talk, or why you find yourself sitting in this room, something brought you to this it. You're going to go away to another it, and you'll have had many before it. But the only one that will ever truly matter, ever, is this one. All the rest is a projection or a memory, mind stuff. This is it, is something else. It is filled with what I probably will misdescribe, but the Tibetan term would be, in my version of it, the clear light of reality. Mostly that's something we see at the end of life, supposedly, as you're dying. And most people miss it because it lasts a second and they don't quite get it. But my proposition is it's happening right now and we're not getting it. The clear light of reality is this. You are sitting in it. It could not be more manifest, more extraordinary, more beautiful, more complete, more absolute than it is right now. And if your mind is here interpreting what I'm saying, you're not here. I mean, you are. You're in the it, but you're using the it to be elsewhere, to process, to put this into a conceptual form that makes it comfortable for your mind. If you're doing all of that stuff, you are not here. You are processing here. You're doing something with here. Being here is a very still state. And one of the remarkable things about the meditation we do is it's not about getting there, although we are always led to that. Get me stress relief, get me some calmness in my life, get me some good job, or whatever you're thinking you're gonna get out of your meditative life, forget it. The only thing stillness and still pointedness gets you is here. The profound depth of this moment, the profound vastness of this moment, the profound beauty and joy and love and expansiveness of this moment is known to very few people. And it's primarily known to very few people because they don't know how to be here. They only know how to get there or try to get there. Or they only live with this sense of, I could have gotten there if I had done this then. Or whatever the configurations are that mess up an entire life and really do mess up entire lives. The only antidote to that, which has been presented to all of us in this room, to many people in the world as a possibility, is sit still. Turn off your phones, turn off the TV, get quiet, and just do this stillness experience and see what it does. And of course, the first thing it will do is reflect how noisy you are, how totally distracted and miserable you are. And you're going to say, why would I ever want to sit with this? Why? Well, that's a good question. Most people can't sit with it. They run the other way as fast as is humanly possible. But Rudy gave us a practice. There are many practices. There are many meditative practices. I cannot speak to the multitudes of them at all, but I can speak to this one. Sit still and look at these chakra centers, these energy centers inside your body. Go into them as places of refuge and as places that embrace you in the stillness, that comfort you in the stillness. Go deep inside and things will happen. These centers, which are things we kind of know about in Western culture, we have this idea of an open mind and an open heart, an intuitive nature, the belly-like nature. These are real spaces. If you can focus on these spaces and really go there, they will take you in out of the noise, out of the distraction, and they will give you a wider vision or a wider and broader experience of the world than the mind will or your day-to-day distractions will. So I really encourage people, I don't care if they do Rudy's work, I don't care what you do, but I would tell you, try to sit still. And you can look at this third eye chakra. This third eye chakra is a place of penetrating insight. It is a way of looking at the world and seeing it through a very large lens. You will see things that will give you clarity and, as I said earlier, perspective. One of the terrible parts of the human journey is we have no perspective. We just see this, 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 and we don't put it into a larger context. This gives you the ability to see and to cognate. This chakra, when it opens, is the experience of understanding. I always say it's like when you see 2 + 2 = 4. Oh, there's like a happening. And when you have an idea for, in my case, a screenplay that will last a lifetime, it just opens and it takes you into a world of creativity. It's a great space. Those of you who are listening to this who have never opened your third eye chakra, it's worth doing. It's worth trying. It's a wonderful place in which to see and understand the life around you. It's also a doorway to the mind, so that can make it very noisy, but it's also a doorway to penetrating clarity and silence. Your throat chakra is all about you. It's all about the I, the me, and those of you who have not learned to use it well will have very awkward times expressing yourself to the world. You will not make yourself heard or known appropriately. When you get this chakra open, you can speak your mind, you can speak your heart, you can speak what you want the world to know, and it's very good for salesmen. It's very good for seducing people that you want to have in your life, to really speaking to them. You can use it for higher purpose or for lower purpose, but when it's really flowing, it is an amazing way to interact with the world honestly and clearly. When it goes really deep inside, you can really talk to yourself. And as I've said in the introductory class, it's the doorway to prayer. Help me. If you don't have this chakra working or open, you are not a fully functioning human being, and life will cause you problems. People who can't speak articulately create problems not only for themselves, but for whole countries. So one has to learn to engage this. Heart chakra, you know what that is. Loving others and loving yourself. Those of you who love others may discover you can actually learn to love the whole of the world. The directive I've been given in recent time, which has been very powerful, especially at night when I can't sleep anymore, is love the world. And I'm very much directed to literally express a love for everything. And I have discovered that I have a capacity, like a big hose, to flood the surroundings with a lot of love. So I use it. You can all do that too. I'm not a unique person. If any of you had known me in Detroit as a kid, you would know that the person sitting in front of you is completely like anybody else you ever met, any other kid on the block, really. No different than you. I have learned a lot from sitting still and from Rudy. This heart chakra thing is essential in terms of it's not about you. And you will discover an ability to care about others that the Dalai Lama calls compassion and empathy. It may be all you need to know, that there are other people out there who need your love and compassion. And if it's not all about you, you actually begin to offer that out. And then what you find, interestingly, coming back, is that the compassion that surrounds you, you happen to live in. The joy you give to others happens to surround you. Rudy said very clearly, don't judge the success of your spiritual life by your own happiness. Judge the success of your spiritual life by the happiness of the people around you. Remember that. Really, really important. Navel chakra. This is where you manifest. It's where you know how to get through the world. If your navel chakra is not working, you'll have the most wonderful dreams and aspirations and hopes and capacities even. But if you cannot manifest them, you will be stuck in wanting and wishing and hoping. That does not lead to a complete or satisfying life. If you want to have a life that manifests what you want, you've got to open this navel chakra. You've got to get there. You've got to take the risks that it will demand of you. You have to jump and experience the fear of loss and of control and give yourself to the greater something. Every success that has happened to me in my life is because, one, I married the right woman, and two, the two of us held hands and jumped over one abyss after another and made huge choices that were not in the best of our apparent interest, like moving to California with enough money to live for 2 months and no jobs. But Blanche heard, I heard, but Blanche took the reins. My friend Brian De Palma, filmmaker, said to Blanche and I when we were out here for the opening of a movie that I had called Brainstorm that I could not even afford to come out to see, but was loaned the money. He said, if you want a career, you've got to be here. You've all heard the story. We went back to DeKalb, Illinois. Blanche went to the supermarket, put a picture of our house on little tear sheets and said, for sale. We're moving to California. I'm telling you, if that had not happened, none of us would be here. And that happened over and over and over. I was a museum curator at the Whitney Museum. A Whitney Museum, that's a big museum in New York. My teacher Rudy died and somebody said I should study and continue the studies in Indiana. Why do you leave a curatorship at the Whitney Museum to go to Indiana? Because I wanted this more than anything. And we left all of that in a New York apartment that probably would have been worth $8 million today. We left and went to Indiana. I called it an act of spiritual romanticism, probably the stupidest thing ever. On the other hand, it grounded us in what we're doing right now. It was the right choice. We have made one choice after another like that. They are risk-taking choices, but they're coming from a space inside your navel that says, do it. Do it. Your sex chakra is going to be the space that renews you when you are depleted. And believe me, you are going to be depleted if you're alive, over and over. Stuff is going to get taken away and part of you is going to die. I am in the process of dying, leaving this house, leaving you, leaving 35 years of pure joyous space. It is a volume of space that cannot be replicated. I have loved this place, I have loved you, those of you who have been here for almost the entire time, those of you who are more recent, leaving you is a killer. And I feel like I am dying. I am dying on many levels, but I have died before. And I know what happens when you die. If you have your sex chakra working, not only does it make life outside you, it renews your own life. And the life that I am losing now, I know and trust and believe will be revived and renewed in a rebirth in a new space. This will happen for everybody over and over. You don't have just one life. Things happen, things will get taken away, and you will find your way back. If you have the juice of this energy working through you, it is beyond dynamic. It is a life-changing energy. And if you have that all working and you get those forces and those energies moving to the base of your spine, they then have this explosive capacity to rise up your spine to the top of your head, to your last chakra, from the Kundalini base to the top of your head, and it blasts you into something that has no time, no space, no form, no content, has no meaning, it has nothing except it is everything. I can only talk to you about it because it has allowed me to visit. I look at it a little bit like I had this LSD trip in the 1960s, thanks to my friend Barry Kaplan, that shattered everything I knew about human experience and the human journey, completely obliterated everything I knew to be true, and did not give me much back, except nothing that you think is what it is. I started looking into teachings that might reference all that, and of course the first ones came from the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, the Song of God, and then the Tibetan teachings, the Book of the Dead, which is part of one Tibetan section, Bardo Todol. I started reading these things and I said, that's what I experienced. And then I found my way into an Eastern path that started to teach me about higher consciousness. And I started to see there was a path to living in the world that the LSD had revealed to me. LSD, and this for some people is, oh, he's talking LSD, forget him. We don't have to listen to him, it's a drug thing. Okay, all I can tell you, there are certain drugs, psychotropic drugs, from mushroom-based materials that grow on the earth that have been processed, that will and have for the centuries of human existence lifted people out of normal consciousness. These mushrooms surround the planet. They are here for a reason. This reason was to show me something way beyond my understanding, and when I came back from it, I said, why did I come back? And the voice inside me, which was not a quiet voice, it was blaring, to tell people what you saw. That became my directive, and it's all I've done, from teaching to making movies. It gave me an audience, it gave me a way to put something out there, but then I realized a movie is one sentence. A whole career is a paragraph of thought. Teaching, I can go on forever, as you all know. I can talk and talk and talk, and I will bring this to a close at some point. But what I'm trying to get at is Whatever I saw in that extraordinary rocket ship blast into the higher universe, I have been building slowly, as are you, higher and higher levels of awareness over the course of the last 50 years. And I am now arriving at a place that is like what that LSD experience was, only it's now not a glimpse, it's a arrival at a level of awareness and consciousness that even then is not the totality. It's just like, oh, it took a lifetime. It took a lifetime. And what is happening now, it's like the expansion of awareness is so massive that I no longer totally understand how to operate in the three-dimensional plane of human experience. I can do it. I do it, but it's definitely being experienced via multi-other dimensions. The human experience does not provide satisfaction for me completely, not as a world in which I am around people who are not aware that they're going to die, people who are lost in the minuscule nature of day-to-day life. It's so meaningless. It has so little value. It's nothing but passing time. It's the melodrama of human existence. The literature of our lives is something else. And I am trying to be with people who have a connection to this higher plane, if you will, of existence. But every one of these words is nauseating to me because none of them get close. None of them get close to where we're heading. I can tell you this. I have begun to wonder whether I should ever have brought any of this to you. Because what I am experiencing right now is so profoundly painful, so annihilating, so disturbing, that sometimes it's hard to breathe because it's so hard to be leaving a dimension of reality for something I cannot articulate. I cannot explain, I cannot understand, I cannot grasp. It is something, it is the isness of all there is, and yet you cannot give it a name, you cannot give it anything. You have to live empty. The loss of the familiar, the loss of the things you care about, the loss of the things you take for granted, like sunrise, sunset, spring, summer, autumn, winter. Those work perfectly when you live in the earth. But when you start to live off the earth, when you start to live in another cosmic dimension, earth space, earth time, earth interests, earth priorities are like, really? Really? It's so big. And why? Why do you care that they didn't give you the raise? Why do you care that your kid yelled at you? Why? I mean, yes, it's all meaningful. It's all part of the whole. But I'm telling you, it's a very big whole. And the vastness of it is so great. And the giving up of your attachment to the familiar, to the known, to the conceptual, to where you can say, oh, I get it, I understand it. You will not get it, and you will not understand it. And you will have to give that up. And when you do, it will challenge you and it will hurt. It will make you, as I'm experiencing, very sad. On the other hand, if you have enough trust, and after 50 years of meditating and sitting, one thing that can evolve is trust. And I'm sort of at 92% trust. I think there's kind of a 8%.
That 8% is a bitch.
It is. It is a bitch. And I am on this, I've committed to this, as you all know, for a very long time. Those of you who are sitting with me have been here, many of you, for a very long time. I can only tell you, I think it's worth it.